Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show today, we're going to hear a little bit about the upcoming ICHA soccer tournament. To that end, I'll be chatting with Brampton team coach Gary Durrell. So tell me a little bit about Brampton's entry in the ICHA tournament.
Well, Brampton, we've been coming to the tournament for about 5 years plus, right? Well, originally, we heard from this tournament from the Brampton B team, because they've been participating for a few years prior to us, to me taking over the C and the D division soccer team. So we heard about it, and they always came back, and they had so much fun. That it piqued our curiosity. What is going on in Windsor that makes them so happy? So we ended up, we came over and we participated and we had a lot of fun. So we came back and we've been coming back ever since.
So can you tell me a little bit about the players themselves, the different ability levels they come in with?
Well, we originally started with the D-level soccer team. And we participated for a few years in there, and we decided to put them at a higher level to participate on a C level, and they fared fairly well for the first year and the second year. So we continued on at that level. But most of the athletes that we have right now currently are at a C level playing for the athletes division, I should say, C level division.
So, for my audience members who might not know what that means, ability-wise, can you tell me a little about that?
Well, with Special Olympics, what we try to do is pair up athletes with equal abilities to play, to participate, and with other athletes of the same ability. So, we try to, in essence, group them in different divisions so that they can compete with other individuals and other teams from other regions that have similar abilities to the athletes that we have. So indirectly, we developed a system where we have several different levels, like the D level athletes will all compete against athletes in another community of a D-level ability. And C-level ability, which is a higher level, will compete at a community at that level also. And then we go to the B-level, which is an even higher level, higher functioning.
So in terms of this year's ICHA tournament, do you expect it'll be the same or different in any way?
I would anticipate it being about the same, unless there's any drastic changes. Our athletes come down and we have a lot of fun there. And at the beginning of our season, our athletes start asking, are we going to Windsor? And our indoor season, we're probably one of the few individuals, communities that have indoor soccer. And we practice from about late October until mid-May. So the athletes actually look forward to that competition because it's about the only competition that's available during the winter months.
So are there any challenges in organizing it and actually making the trip to Windsor?
Putting together the team is an easy thing because we already have an existing team that we practice during the winter. The only other challenges we look at is transportation and accommodation. And that's not really a major challenge because usually we're pretty good with that. Right? We raise funds to get the accommodations, et cetera.
So in all the time you've been attending the tournament, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
The major thing for myself is that to see the athletes at the end of the tournament, that they make new friends, and they compete at their level, and it's important for them because this is what we do. This is the purpose of having the tournament and putting together the teams is allowing them to compete, and they love the competition. I mean, it's just at the end of it all, they just, when we're leaving, they're looking forward for a new year coming back to Windsor. That's what stands out in my mind, that, you know, the excitement from all the athletes.
So, does special needs soccer differ from the able-bodied version in any great way, or are the rules about the same?
Yes, the rules are about the same, with the exception of the amount of athletes that's on the pitch at any given time. For the regular soccer, the teams have about 11, and with Special Olympics and special needs soccer, we do 6 and a goalie, which is a total of 7. So that is the major difference. For pretty much everything else, we go with FIFA rules.
So if you could send any one message about the need for inclusive athletics tournaments like this one, what would you say?
That it brings these tournaments and these activities brings awareness to the community that there are special needs individuals out there and they deserve to compete and participate at levels that they're comfortable with. And that's very important for them because without a venue like what you're providing there for them, there is no other, I mean, it's difficult for them to compete at a mainstream level. So by yourself and the organizers putting on these programs, it's just amazing that it helps everyone and it raises awareness that these individuals are out there and they need a venue the same as all the other mainstream opportunities that's out there.
So what are the next steps for the team getting ready for the tournament?
Well, currently right now we are looking at organizing. We did raise enough funds to come down for the 3 days because we usually spend 3 days, and that's what makes this so exciting because we travel and we stay overnight, and the athletes really look forward to that also. So it's mainly transportation and accommodations right now, which I don't foresee being a major issue at this current time.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
A tournament such as this one isn't just about bringing together players with disabilities. It's also about overturning the biggest myth in all of disability life, the idea that you're just facing it alone, that no one understands. For a lot of these kids, a lot of these players coming in, it's a once-a-year deal, but it's a life-changing experience. They're seeing people just like them who understand the strength and the character of a person with a disability. They're seeing athletes of similar abilities. They're not thinking about the things that might hold them back. They're just out there enjoying, having fun, living, laughing, being a part of it all. And Gary was exactly right that a venue like this does raise awareness. It's critical, especially in an Olympic year. People might start to rest on their laurels. They might start to think that things like the Paralympics are the only thing out there, that tossing a turkey bone once every 4 years for these athletes is enough. It's not. If you're a player and you love your game, play it. Simple as that. No matter the ability level, no matter what you've been told you can or cannot do, it's up to you to find. There are always venues. There are always avenues. I've had the good pleasure of interviewing professional racers who were told they could never walk again. So they took up wheelchair racing. And they've discovered it's an incredible athletic experience. For these players coming in, the game is a highlight. It's people saying to them that you are an athlete worth watching, that you bring something to this sport. It's just as intense a competition, just as much fun to watch as any other player. That's what I love about the tournament. Brings people together, and it's done in the spirit of good fellowship. On the disabilities credo, let me win. But if I can't, let me be brave in the attempt. That's really what athletics should always be. And for athletes with disabilities, the simple truth is they should be recognized for who and what they are. People of strength, great spirit, and the ability to surprise us all. The ability to just take it in the moment. It's an incredible blessing. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey, I'm Emerson.
And I'm Farah. We are your hosts for the new program, No Scrubs.
Our show will include various issues and concerns, controversial topics, and interviews with professionals about health and wellness.
Check out the nursing radio program, No Scrubs, on CJAM 99.1 FM. Listen live on Tuesdays at 1200. If you miss the show, or if you can't get enough, catch it again on Wednesdays at 1630. You can listen to the live shows or archives online at www.cjam.ca.
While you're at it, like our page and hit us up on www.facebook.com/cjamnoscrubs. We want to hear from you. Email your health questions and stories to nursingcjam@gmail.com and they may be read anonymously on the air.
Welcome back to HandyLink. Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from soccer coach Gary Durrell about his team's participation in the upcoming ICHA tournament. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kim Willis from the Canadian Mental Health Association. Tell me a little bit about the CMHA.
Well, the Canadian Mental Health Association has been a lead community provider of mental health services for over 45 years in this community. And on average, we serve about 2,500 clients in in various programs.
So what are the most common types of mental health issues you see?
I mean, I think there's a pretty wide spectrum that we see. Everything from mild to more severe mental illnesses, but certainly depression, anxiety, and then more severe forms of mental illness. So psychosis, we have an early intervention program that deals with people early in their lives dealing with that, people with bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. So, I mean, we see a lot, a wide spectrum here at our branch.
So how do you go about removing the myths and the barriers that still surround that?
Well, I think that we've made tremendous strides in the last 10 years even, alleviating stigma around mental illness. I think, as you know, there's a long way to go, but it has certainly helped with companies such as Bell and RBC and Great West Life coming on board and realizing the importance of mental health, that it's just a part of your health, just like any other physical disease, and just talking about it. And we certainly have done a lot to be more visible and encourage people to talk about it, just like as if they had any other illness, such as diabetes or what have you.
So are there any challenges in providing services to people with mental health issues?
I mean, I think the main challenge historically has been a couple of things. First off, like we know, stigma has, you know, people are hesitant to reach out for help because of that. It's been seen as a form of weakness, and people don't want to be judged. And also, just, you know, knowing when it is feasible to go about seeking help. And then navigation of the system has historically not been very easy for those dealing with mental illness. So together with our partners at Hotel Du Grace Healthcare, we are have worked diligently over the last few years to make it a more streamlined process so that whether you're in primary care or in the community, it can be a more seamless transition. And whether you approach the hospital or CMHA, if we don't have the service or the program that you need, we can refer you to somewhere in the community where you can go for treatment.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the CMHA, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Absolutely. I think we've launched our Soul Focus project last February, which was around getting the community rallied for taking a stand for mental health. It was about extending the conversations. We launched that as a 3-year campaign to you know, build momentum and get lots of partners involved. We've had thousands of people participate in this campaign through social media. And also, we have over 20 strategic partners, so everyone from the City of Windsor, Caesars Windsor, Hotel Du Grace Healthcare, the Detroit Tigers, the Windsor Spitfires, the list goes on and on. And these are companies and organizations that realize how important mental health is to their own employees and also the customers that they serve. It was a $500,000 fundraising goal over 3 years to support the outreach, education, and training that we provide. And we're close to achieving that goal in less than a year. So I think that speaks magnitudes about the willingness and the appetite to support mental health in this community. So that we are extremely proud of that, and we feel that we are shifting the tide and creating a movement.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the services that are available?
Well, we do that all the time through different campaigns. So we are on social media a lot. We also use traditional media to showcase any stories or highlight the services that we provide. We participate in numerous health fairs throughout the year. So we definitely, any opportunity that we have that we can show what CMHA is and what we're about, we participate in.
So when you mentioned showcasing stories,
mm-hmm.
is there any example, any story that's really impacted you in a personal or professional sense?
I mean, I hear about them all the time, but I think, just trying to think of one in particular. I mean, I see so many people that have struggled with bereavement, for example, dealing with the loss of a child. And I can't imagine anything more horrific than that. And I see what our program and our support groups do for those parents and how it allows them to move forward with their lives, knowing that it's a new normal they are embracing. But, you know, those are always very powerful and touching stories that that speak to what we can do in the community and how we can assist individuals.
So if you could send any one message about the need for mental health access and equality, what would you say?
I would say that we have to look at mental illness just as we would any other physical type of illness. And there's no shame in coming forward for support, that it should be encouraged and embraced, and that there are great services in this community that can assist individuals and families.
So what are the next steps going forward for the association?
Well, we have lots of exciting things happening. We continue to develop partnerships with other organizations in the community. I mentioned that Hotel Du, Grace Healthcare, we have a formal collaboration with. We also have partnership agreements with the City of Windsor through Housing, Family Services Windsor Essex, the Windsor Essex Community Health Unit, and countless other partners that we work with all the time, because we know that funding is tight for everyone, so there's strength in collaboration, and there's, you know, we shouldn't be duplicating services. We should be working together to make the system stronger. So we are part of a mental health roundtable, actually one of the leaders of that, bringing together community partners to look at some key priority areas of how we can strengthen our services and our programs. And we're close to launching coordinated access with Hotel Du Grace Healthcare, which, again, as I spoke to, just again streamlines that process of there's no wrong entry point to the mental health system. Whether you go to the hospital or you come to CMHA, we'll be able to refer you, you know, through one referral source to the appropriate services and programs in the community.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
But okay.
If you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd
sure.
be great. I'm a little floored, folks, but not by maybe something you'd expect. When Kim said that mental illness or mental health issues can be perceived as a sign of weakness, that is not so with any disability, any condition. It may change the way you navigate the world or the way you look at it, the way you think about it, but it is never a sign of weakness, my friends. It is actually, in my books, a sign of strength. Finding your way of dealing with it, not giving in to the backwards thinking or the myths, the stereotypes. You may move around a little differently, you may think a little differently, you may speak a little differently. Your mind may work a little differently. How can we equate that with a sign of weakness? Just because you can't see beyond the surface doesn't mean there isn't something there, some factor that makes this person unique. And if there is, so what? They're still a human being. Still entitled to the same services, the same access as anyone else in society. We can't limit our understanding and our desire to know the things we can see or hear or easily perceive. Fact is, mental health issues, they're the deepest kind of all. And I'm glad to hear there's a bereavement program. For someone whose depression is just too much and it ends in tragedy, there has to be support for those left behind. Because can turn into a vicious cycle very easily. A person is overwhelmed by depression, ends their life. Then, those who are left behind feel the weight of that, their own depression. But together, talking about the issues surrounding these things, we can keep those numbers in check and hopefully come to a place where things like that just don't happen in our world. A little understanding, a 5-minute conversation with somebody can make all the difference, you know. For a person going through depression simply because they feel no one listens to them, no one understands that they have a voice and something to say. If you see someone in need, you fill that need. You need someone to talk to them. Someone needs to talk to you, be a sounding board. It's not rocket science. It's simply a matter of keeping an open mind. Sometimes it is easy to let issues like depression weigh on us. You might come to a place where you say, this person isn't very pleasant to be around, so why should I want to? Why? Because this is a person with hopes, dreams, and potentials, sadly masked by emotional issues that they need to navigate through. But I'll tell you one thing, folks. Navigating those issues with the perception that you're alone and unloved is a lot worse. Support organizations and individuals are key. Fact is, it all comes down to what's in the mind for any disability. If a person believes they can succeed or find a way, they will. But if they give in to the myths, the doubts, the disbelief that there's anything worth sticking around for, there's anything makes them a worthy human being, then the battle is lost. Because the instant you decide to surrender to those falsehoods that say you're never going to amount to anything or the world will never get better, that's the moment you've decided to stop living and simply give in to the storm. It's not something any of us has to do. For an athlete, for example, who spends all their life perfecting their sport and suddenly winds up paralyzed and uncertain if they'll ever play again. So what? Adapt the sport. Adapt to it. You change your thinking to say, I'm still an athlete. I'm still going to do this. Maybe it's a little modified, but so what? Fact is, athletics programs are geared based on equipment, based on different ways of doing things. And honestly, it's up to the individual to say, this is not going to crush me. This is not going to turn me from the things that I love. And maybe I have to ask the questions. Maybe I have to probe a little deeper to find out if there's really something meaningful for me. A program, a support, maybe even just a sounding board. Dig until you find one. They do exist. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear your stories, folks. But the fact is, your story, everyone's story, needs to be heard in order to be understood. You don't get help if you don't ask for it. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.